One in four Americans reject any affiliation with organized religion, and nearly half of those under 30 describe themselves as spiritual but not religious. Which brings up the question, who speaks for the millions who find no joy in whittling the wonder of existence to a simple yes-no choice? Now, Leslie Hazelton, a widely admired writer on religion, celebrates agnosticism as the most vibrant, engaging, and ultimately the most honest stance toward the mysteries of existence. She does so in her new book, Agnostic, A Spiritual Manifesto, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Leslie Hazelton to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
A mutual pleasure.
Thank you very much. Let us talk about how you came to this subject and what ultimately you wanted to say when it comes to being agnostic.
How I came to the subject is I'm really tired of being defined in the negative, you know, as nuns. That's supposed to speak for people who are religiously, what they call religiously unaffiliated, or quote-unquote spiritual but not religious, you know. And all these, it's very striking that these are negative terms. You're defining people by what they are not. And, you know, I mean, it's nothing quite like insulting 40% of the population by defining them in the negative. And then there's this whole thing of, you know, agnostics are somehow in between. You know, you've got this flat line of belief, unbelief, and you have to sort of be one side or the other, or else you're kind of just sitting on the fence in between, wishy-washy, I don't know, and all this, you know, this kind of helpless shrug. This is not what it is to be agnostic. To be agnostic is, I think, I call it the agnostic stance. I don't call it agnosticism because the last thing we need is yet another ism. But the agnostic stance is a stance of inquiry, a stance of curiosity, fully engaged with the world and with the grand untangibles, intangibles, and ultimately unanswerable questions of meaning and existence. And it's fully engaged with them, and it leaves that flat line of belief, unbelief, where it belongs, which is on the ground, because that is just the most dismayingly simplistic, reductive way to even start thinking about being in the world and what that means and how we are in the world. So I see it as a position, I see the agnostic stance as a position of great intellectual and emotional integrity, and I stand tall as an agnostic.
How did you reach your agnostic stance? Many of us have very complicated histories when it comes to our spiritual or religious beliefs. How did you come to your agnostic stance?
Yes, these are deeply emotional questions that go very, very deep to identity. I think I've always been agnostic. Well, you know, I'm an agnostic Jew. I was raised Jewish at home, went to a Catholic convent school. So at one point wanted to be a rabbi. It just appealed to me somehow. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, on the other hand, when I was young, of course, I wanted to be a nun, just like the nuns in school. But, you know, N-U-N, not N-O-N-E. But I think I've always been agnostic, always sort of been fascinated by this deep emotional issue of, you know, this vast and varied universe that we sort of squish under the heading of religion, whether pro or con. And people get very worked up about it for very good reasons. It goes very deep to questions of our existence in this world.
One of the things I love about the book is that you very much reject the idea that an agnostic is closed to ideas, quite the opposite, that you are open to the mysteries of the world and these unexpected moments of, well, grace.
Grace, wonder, awe, mystery, bring them all on. Oh, yes. I mean, I have no desire to live in a state of conviction, whether it's theist conviction or atheist conviction. You know, what we forget when we say that someone is convinced, you know, and dogmatic atheists, for instance, often accuse agnostics of, and I quote, lacking the courage of their convictions, which is really strange. It just makes me ask, what exactly does conviction have to do with courage? Especially when actually it's a negative correlation. But, you know, what we forget about conviction is that it has a double meaning. It's not only to be convinced of something, It's also to be convicted like a prisoner in his cell, right? To be closed in, constrained, confined. And you're closed up because your mind is made up. You know, it's made up tight like an army cot in barracks, but you know, not a crease or a wrinkle in sight. And I want my mind open. I want to explore. I don't want to plop myself down and say, hey, found it, whatever that, you know, it might be. I just want to keep exploring. I want to see what's there. I want to see more of what's there. And I want to keep asking, keep questioning, keep exploring. I really don't want to arrive anywhere.
I put a tag on a part that you wrote in the book, one of many, I would add. But let me ask you about this. There's a chapter, Making Meaning, and you write, I resist thinking of myself as spiritual. The tag feels too nebulous and at the same time too self-congratulatory. But the term has become so widespread that I find myself defined by it nonetheless. And
yeah,
that kind of goes back to what you were saying at the beginning of our conversation, is that you find yourself being defined, although often wrongly.
Yes, I mean, people love categorizing other people. You know,
right.
You categorize someone, you put them in a neat pigeonhole, and that's it. You've decided how you're going to react to them, how you're going to respond to what they say or what they think and so on. And this is extraordinarily limiting. We limit other people and we limit the way we see other people too, as well as limiting the way we think. That's the trouble with all these polls about belief and so on, is that the pollsters believe in categories. And they very, you know, it's very rare to be able to stand up straight in pollster lands. You know, you have to, they kind of force the issue by making you lean this way or lean that way, sort of leaving no room to define things on your own. You know, everything is predefined. And everything to do with religion comes loaded with such a mass of assumptions, such a mass of things taken for granted, which, by the way, when I was doing the research for the book, I started marking them down as TTFGs for short, because there was just so many of them. Things we just take for granted and don't question. And as I say, I question, think. That's the sign of a mind that's alive and working. And that, to me, is what's exciting about being alive. Responding, questioning, seeing, looking, exploring, not deciding one way or the other, like there's only two ways to go.
So in that quote I just read, it was about the term and about being called spiritual. To you, what is being spiritual?
To me, it's being alive to the world, being alive to this extraordinary mystery of human existence in the world. To, you know, there are these magnificent intangibles of consciousness. Nobody understands consciousness. Nobody. Human consciousness of infinity, which is by definition, you know, it's as large as you can get, but it's by definition undefinable, unmeasurable, ungraspable. And then, of course, whatever it is that we conceive of when we use what's basically the metaphysical shorthand of the word God, these are our magnificent intangibles, and I have no desire to cut them down to human size, to reduce them to kind of memes for or against.
Hmm. You talk toward the end of the book about the idea of a soul.
Oh, that's my favorite chapter.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for bringing that up.
So how do you, because it seems as though you really are conflicted when it comes to that.
Oh, no.
No?
Oh, no. I think the language is conflicted. I think the way we think is conflicted. You know, we talk about the soul, and there it is, the definite article, right? Like it's a thing that we can measure, or that leaves the body at death. Like it's an entity. And I think, you know, maybe we can take our cue from soul music, soul food, you know, that we live with soul rather than own or possess a soul. You know, there's so much language of possession and ownership. It's almost like the capitalist approach to belief. You know, you have a belief, you own a belief. It's sort of like the spiritual haves and have-nots, you know. Instead of thinking of it all in this way, maybe we can think of just, as I say, living with soul and what that might mean, being open to the world.
And I guess when I say conflicted meaning, and you're right, of how the language around it, because you even talk about your Irish mother who, of saying, she's a good soul.
She's a good soul. God bless her, she's a good soul, right?
But
it was very sweet. It was lovely. Right.
But there is, it does, it runs the risk of becoming very cliché.
Yeah. And I think this whole book, I'm trying to get beyond the clichés that mass around all issues to do with religion. Just trying to get to much deeper issues. I'm trying to rise above this sort of miserably flat level that the discussion has been on so far. I mean, at times this so-called debate between believers and atheists has sounded more like a Republican presidential debate with everybody busy yelling at each other and actually not much being said, an awful lot of hot air. And I really just want to, as I say, explore the issues, explore what's really involved here, explore the things we wonder at, explore the things that make us feel larger, that expand our lives.
When it comes to using the term agnostic, and this is something going back to what we described, what you described at the beginning of our conversation, which is when you look at the polls, a good quarter to a third of the people identify with exactly what you're talking about. But then it becomes more of a labeling issue.
And nearly 40% of those are under 30.
Yes. And so then it becomes a label because they may feel that way, but they wouldn't necessarily say that they are agnostic.
Exactly. And I really don't blame them because that word agnosticism, as I said earlier, the last thing we need is another ism. That's why I call it the agnostic stance. It's a way of thinking, a way of being, a way of approaching all these great questions without saying, hey, this is what we believe and, you know, you've got to join us and this is the party line. And it's much more open than that. So I'm not trying to preach agnosticism. And I'm not trying to convert anybody. And the subtitle, I called it agnostic, but the subtitle is The Spirited Manifesto. And I'm very, very aware of the irony in that because it's, in a way, it's almost a kind of anti-manifesto. You know, it's not saying, okay, this is it. This is what's going to solve all the problems in the world. It's saying, hey, let's look, let's think, let's explore, let's just wonder and see what we can find. And if we don't find anything, great, let's go further. Let's go on to infinity.
Those who believe, those who are religious, have certain, obviously the Bible, have various texts that they use to feed their religious stance. Do you have literature? Do you have reading that helps feed your agnostic stance?
Oh, what a great question! It comes from all over. Well, there's the classic, you know, William James. That's the brother of Henry James, by the way, a psychologist. His Varieties of Religious Experience, which was written over 100 years ago. I always go back to that. There's a wonderful philosopher at New York University called Thomas Nagel, who is a philosopher of consciousness, writes about this strange, weird, mysterious phenomenon of human consciousness that for all the neuroscience in the world, we still do not understand. He wrote a wonderful essay, by the way, back in the 80s called What's It Like to Be a Bat? I mean, how can you not love a philosopher who writes an essay called What's It Like to Be a Bat? And as he points out, we know a lot about bats. We know how they fly and, you know, we know about their radar. We know what they eat and so on. And we know the physical structure of a bat. But we have no idea of what it's like to be a bat, of the experience of being a bat. And I love this because he's inquiring into human experience. And that's what I want to do.
The name of the book is Agnostic, A Spirited Manifesto. It is published by Riverhead Books. Leslie Hazelton, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Total pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Agnostic, A Spiritual Manifesto. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.